Hey, this is, in my humble opinion, with Chaz Douglas. I have a very special guest. I got Jawan Hawkins on today, man. Thanks for coming on, Jawan.
Oh, thanks for having me, my brother. I appreciate you.
Hey, man, before we start, man, I do want to say this because I don't know if you remember this, but it was like, I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5 months ago before the podcast started, I went on Facebook. I knew I was going to start a podcast, and I went on Facebook, and I was wondering, like, okay, what's some names to use? And so for the listeners, Jawan actually gave me the name for the podcast. Do you remember me putting that out there? You said, hey, you know, what about In My Humble Opinion with Chaz Douglas? I'm like, man, I like that.
I do remember that, man, you know, and I feel like it would be fitting. The type of person you are, you always chill, laid back. But obviously, when you do speak, you always have something of value to say. So I just feel like it was a great fit for you. And I'm honored that you actually decided to move forward with that title.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that, man. Another thing, man, like we've been, you know, going to CTAB for a number of years now. I remember like we kind of sat in the same area, I think, you know, before like the pandemic and everything. Like, I think, you know, you and your Sharika would, you know, either be behind me or in front of me, but we kind of sat in the same area. But I did want to say, like, man, how much a respect I have for you and Sharika just doing the work and the ministry with serving with the young people, because I know we serve the young people, the high school group. And, you know, we've been doing that for some years. So I wanted to, you know, give you your credit for that. You and your wife, your credit for that, because, you know, they the next group. And I'm glad that we, you know, you are pouring into them and you know, trying to, you know, instill some positive morals and values in them and spiritually.
No doubt, my brother. We just, you know, as I'm sure is the case with you, we just do it to glorify God. And it's our way of contributing to the kingdom in the best way that we see fit. You know, connecting with youth, as you know, is a very challenging thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's a group that's ever evolving. Generationally, they just go about their lives a lot differently. But I think it's a mutual benefit being involved with the youth ministry, because just as much as we teach and pour into them, we also learn from them terms of, you know, just how they go about life, their thought processes, what their challenges are, and how we can better support them as adults. So, you know, having a 10-year-old, there was a little bit of an ulterior motive for getting involved with the youth ministry, because the teens that we were working with really kind of give me a projection into what I'm going to be dealing with when my son reaches that age. So. Uh-huh. I say, hey, I gotta get a preview. And our youth at the church are awesome. I mean, obviously they're there for a reason, because somebody brought them or somebody influenced them to stay connected to God. And we're appreciative of their village for encouraging them to come out every Sunday and be a participant, even if they may not want to talk all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that's a struggle.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I would rather that we have them there than out in the street and out in the world being influenced by other things.
No, that's good. You're right about that. Is, you know, we got some really good youth at CTAB, and you know, I just enjoy working with them. And I know, like, you talk about the youth ministry, but you also you can, you know, pretty much say that you serve young people in other areas too, like as far as with your books and everything. So I know you have 2 books that you still use and promote and try and work, you know, with other authors and vendors to get that word out there. You got the Finding My Way and then Donovan's College Adventure. So, like, how are you using those books to kind of encourage young people?
Well, everybody, in my humble opinion, no pun intended, everybody has a story. And my story was one of being a first generation college student raised on the west side of Detroit to a single mother, middle child of three boys. And, you know, we use education as a pathway to kind of break generational cycles of poverty and so forth in our family. And so when we started college as first gen students, my brothers and I, we really didn't know how to navigate that environment. And so we struggled mightily. I lost some scholarship money because I just didn't know how to navigate that space. I was on active and probation. You know, it was a challenge, and it was only because of some very well-intentioned people at Wayne State University that I was able to get myself up off the mat, dust myself off, and get back in the race, and ultimately graduate, go on to complete a master's, and then start a career in higher education. But that was the inspiration behind my first book, Finding My Way, in 2016, is that, you know, I realized that as a higher ed professional, there were so many kids that were coming into the higher ed environments that I was working in that reminded me of myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could see sort of the train wreck, you know, starting to happen. I'm like, geez, you know, I got a story to tell that might be beneficial to this population of students that are coming in. So let me put pen to paper and put something out there tangibly that they can carry with them, keep with them, refer to, that will empower them to be better, more efficient, more effective, and more confident college students. And so I'm really blessed to see that, you know, Finding My Way, even, you know, 7 years later, is still a work that people find value in. Yeah, and people see as, you know, a tangible tool that they want to give to their kids, their grandkids, their students, if they're educators and so forth. I still get requests to come out and speak to, you know, college bound students or current college students about the contents of the book and how it can be used to empower our youth. So, yeah, I'm very proud of that particular work. But when I would go out, one of the things that I noticed, in particular at book fairs, is that, you know, a lot of people were bringing small children to these book fairs.
Okay.
And I had no idea how popular children's books were. And so I felt like that was a population, even though I had Finding My Way out there and it was getting a positive response, that population, that, you know, preschool to second grade population, I wasn't connecting with because obviously the reading level was too high.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point in time, my son was about 5 years old. And we sat down at the kitchen table and talked about the college going process and what that might look like for a 5-year-old if they imagine themselves in that higher ed environment. And that was really the birth of Donovan's College Adventure, which, you know, kind of outpaced Finding My Way by way of popularity because, like I said, children's books just have a way of telling a story in a way that's so much more meaningful to young scholars that are trying to figure out life and being exposed to various stimuli. So, you know, reading month is coming up in March.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to that month every year because I get tons of requests from schools to have me come out and read with their kids. Sometimes I'm able to take Donovan with me and we just share the story about Donovan Mack, the character in the book who imagines himself in the higher ed environment, doing all the things that grown up college students get to do every day. So, it's a really cool story, a great read for kids, a good way to introduce them to the higher ed environment and connecting the education to the careers that they say they aspire to be in when they become adults. So oftentimes we talk about, you know, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? But we don't talk about the path that it takes to get there. And so that's what Donovan's College Adventure is all about.
That's awesome. I'm curious to know this, like, being 5 years old, I never thought about, you know, I wasn't thinking about college then. I started thinking more about college maybe in like the fourth grade. So, you know, not giving away all the book, what was like a idea that Donovan thought about as a 5-year old going to college that, you know, maybe adults maybe or kids may not even think about when they're 5 years old? Was it something that stood out to say, hey man, this, you know, this 5 year, you know, my son thought of something that I never thought about as an adult, you know, going to college?
Well, I think that naturally as parents, your thought process is for the next generation to be better off than your generation, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, having two parents who have attained master's degrees, he's naturally going to be privy to certain conversations that mm-hmm. we weren't privy to because, you know, our parents just didn't have that experience, right? At least my parents didn't have that experience. So mm-hmm. it was just important to us to infuse those types of conversations into our day-to-day interactions with Donovan. So when he says, hey, I want to be a professional football player, it's like, you know the pathway to become an athlete is to first be a student athlete. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to at least complete 2 years of college before you can even enter a NFL and things of that nature. Now, whether or not he goes on to become a pro football player is yet to be determined, but what we do know is that that education is going to play a major role no matter what path he chooses on his success path. And so with that being said, it was really just about us having conversations with him that gave him the language in order to spit certain things back to us. Okay. Like, okay, well, so do we still, you know, have this class? Or do we still study math in college, or do we still study science in college? And so we would have those conversations. And so you'll notice if you look at some of the images in Donovan's College Adventure, we talk about careers, we talk about some of the experiences. So Donovan in the book is doing, you know, chemistry experiments in a lab. He's studying abroad in other countries. You know, he's playing collegiate sports. Mm-hmm. And so this all the things that, once again, our young adult college students get to experience, we wanted him to experience in the book and show kids that, hey, this is what your future is going to look like mm-hmm. if you continue on this path beyond high school. And so I take this role as a dad, you know, seriously. And mm-hmm. like I said, it was important to me just to make sure that we give him the language that allows him to understand that these things just don't happen by osmosis. There's a process, and this mm-hmm. is part of the process.
Oh, that's good. And I say this too, Donovan is a great young man. Like one day we had to combine a couple times we had to combine the classes, and he just was, you know, very respectful, did what was asked of him, and, you know, I didn't have any problems with him. So, you know, I do see, you know, you all are doing a great job with him.
Well, and here's the thing. Everybody can rear their kids the way they want to rear their kids. But, you know, I'm extremely blessed to say, you know, look, we don't believe in corporal punishment when it mm-hmm. comes to raising Donovan. But I get the consistent message from teachers, like you said, youth ministry leaders, people in the community, his coaches, as it pertains to him playing football and basketball, that he is a very respectful and upstanding young man. And, you know, but that's the expectation. That's the bar, you know, that we wanted to set for him, because we understand that, you know, for him to become a well-adjusted adult, he has to be a kid that's raised with love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not in survival mode. So we don't want him to be in survival mode. So he doesn't have to, you know, come into these environments with that survival mode edge. Yeah, he's going to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to compete as it pertains to, you know, being on the playing field and so forth. But he understands that at the end of the day, his parents are going to give him a hug, smile at him, and say, hey, you know, you did a great job. Let's look at how we can be better tomorrow. And so it really, you know, does my heart well to hear from you that, you know, he's consistent, whether we're there or not. And that's all you can ask for as a parent, is that when you're not around, when you're not, you don't have eyes on the kid, that he's going to be just as respectful as if you were sitting right there.
Yeah. And that's what it is. Hey, you know, Juwan, I talk a lot about relationships, and I know that I'm saying the name right, Sharika, right?
You are.
Okay, yes, all right. Absolutely. I just want to make sure I say, you all been married for how many years? Because I see it on Facebook, and I know it's a number of years. How many years have you all been married?
We just celebrated 16 years in September.
Okay. So, I knew it was over 15, and I think, yep. you know, y'all posted it. So, like, I'm curious to know, what was the story behind it? How did y'all meet? And, you know, we'd just go, how did y'all meet? Because I'm always curious to know, like, how relate, you know, especially when they have, you know, when they have a family and then they grow together and have over, you know, got 16 years together. We're 16 years of marriage. I know y'all were, you know, dating before that. Like, what's the story behind you all?
Well, I've known Sharika all my adult life. I met her when I was 21 years old. She was home. She was just coming home from Michigan State, where she was going to undergrad. I'm a local kid, so I was at Wayne State. But I worked for Sprint PCS when I was in college. That was my college gig. And we had meetings every Wednesday. And after the meetings, we go hang out, you know, with some of the coworkers and so forth. And one of my coworkers convinced us to go to this place called Banana Joe's, which was like a club in inside Great Lakes Crossing. It's no longer there. So that lets you know how long ago this was.
Okay.
He's like, Banana Joe's, but no, it's no longer there. So you don't go looking for it. But she came in with her aunt and a couple of her friends, and I was there with my homeboys, and, you know, we connected, had a great conversation. I think that night I probably talked to her for, three, four hours straight.
Okay.
And with the exception of a couple of days here and there, we've probably talked every day since then.
Okay.
And so we are proof positive that you can meet your husband or your wife anywhere. We met at a club, you know, which is one of the least likely places you would think, you know, to meet somebody. And, you know, the other piece, because you and I were connected through the church, is that Sharika really introduced me to the church. I didn't grow up in the church.
Okay.
So, you know, my mom, dad, they didn't really go to church consistently. My grandmother did. But it was a real old school church. My mom didn't force us to go, but we go, you know, obviously on Easter or if something big was happening. But for the most part, I didn't start going to church until Sharika and I started dating. And her uncle, Pastor Crump, has a church up in Pontiac and Door Faith Ministries. And that's where I was introduced to, you know, to Christ, man. And, you know, she never beat me upside the head with it, even though she knew that I wasn't attending on a regular basis. But she would always talk about just things that she was learning, how she was growing as a person and so forth, and just being a light, you know, for the kingdom. And that's what really got me connected. And I said, you know what, I gotta go see what this is about. And you know, eventually it just became you know, an integral part of my life. And I'm forever grateful for her for just getting me connected, you know, spiritually, and plugging me in. And like I said, we've been rocking ever since, man, 2000.
Okay.
So 24 years.
Yeah.
24 years, man. And you know, we reevaluate our relationship on a regular basis. And, you know, just do check-ins with each other. Hey, you know, how you feel about this? How you feel about that? Because we're ever evolving creatures as humans. And so, you know, I think one of the misnomers about marriage is that, you know, it's always going to be as blissful as it is when you first meet. And I hate to spoiler alert, I guess, is that that's just not the way it works, you know, but it doesn't mean that you can't have a fruitful, loving, nurturing, supportive marriage 10, 15, 20 years down the line. And so I think we're really proof positive of that. Never perfect, never have been perfect, but we're right for each other. And that's what matters.
What would you say are some keys or some things that you would contribute to, you know, the 24 years of being together and 16 years of marriage? What are some keys of a longevity, would you say?
I would say humility is probably one of the biggest keys, and that's on both sides, man and woman. You know, our egos oftentimes get in the way of fruitful conversation because we oftentimes as people feel the need to be right as opposed to the need to move forward and to foster growth and understanding and empathy with one another. Once again, that's the difference between, you know, being nurtured in love or nurtured in survival. Survival is always a fight, right? It's like, I gotta get over on you, or I gotta get you before you get me. And in a marriage, that can be a very toxic energy to have around you. And so I think that when we mature to a space where we say, you know what, I can understand your perspective. I may not always agree with it, but I can understand your perspective. I can understand where I could have done things better or differently. I'm not always right. And I'm willing to accept when I'm wrong and do the work that it takes to, you know, correct whatever mistake I made. That comes from a place of humility because, like I said, our egos oftentimes leave us devoid of the ability to admit wrong and admit fault. And at the end of the day, we're imperfect creatures. So we're always going to, you know, find ourselves in situations where we don't do things quite right. We don't say things quite right. Maybe we didn't listen intently enough to each other. And it caused us to not be on the same page. But I think that longevity for us is really rooted in humbling ourselves to understand that a marriage is bigger than the two of us. That's another thing I look at. Marriage is in many ways it's a ministry, but it's also a movement because our communities are stronger when men and women are in the same household, you know, under that covenant of marriage, raising your children together, right? And yes, co-parenting can be, you know, effective. It can be positive. It can be, it can work, right? But there's statistical information and data that tells us that, you know, kids that are raised in households with both parents are more likely to, you know, go to college, less likely to go to prison, more likely to foster healthy relationships themselves when they grow up, and so on and so forth. So there's so many positive effects of that, that, you know, when you really look at marriage, it's an infusion of positive energy into the communities that we live in.
That's good.
And so I think we just have to look at it from that perspective. And when you look at it from the perspective of I'm part of something that's bigger than me, then that should humble you enough to say, you know what, whatever I was tripping about, I need to get myself back together so that we can keep this thing going.
Now, that's good. Being a man, you know, I know we can only speak from a man's perspective. What advice would you give a single man that's looking, that's desiring to be married?
I would say focus on you. I know it sounds strange to talk about, you know, connecting with another person, but focusing on you. But here's the thing. A man who is able to focus on his goals, on his health, on his education, on his overall well-being will always be attractive.
Okay.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
So as an attractive man, you're going to garner a certain amount of attention from, you know, from women.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to use your discernment, right, to determine, you know, through your experiences with the women that you choose to give your time to, because remember, you're focusing on you. So you're only going to have so much time to date and court someone and, you know, talk on the phone and take them to dinner and, you know, all of these things, right?
Yeah.
But once you open up that space to do that, you're going to have to use your discernment to determine whether or not that's wifey. But you know, I truly believe that your heart will guide you, and you'll get signs as to whether or not this is someone that you truly can see as a future partner, versus someone that you're just dating because you think they're cute, they think you're cute.
Yeah.
So I would just say focus on you, because when you focus on you and you're refining yourself as a man, then you're going to have opportunities that may not be afforded to somebody who is not focused on themselves and aren't pouring into themselves enough to become an attractive candidate for marriage.
Oh, that's good. Hey, Juwan, what would you say, like, you think you were ready for when you got married? And then what were some things that you had to learn while you were, you know, in your marriage?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't know if you're ever really ready for marriage. So let me say that, you know, this is as a 16-year vet, I was not ready for marriage at the age of 28. I got married young, you know, and I just think, once again, the maturity level for marriage was not there. Learning how to cohabitate with someone was a learning curve as well, because you're accustomed to having your own space, you're accustomed to having your own thing, your own way of running your household, and then you've got this other person that you love, but they've got their own idiosyncrasies, right? And so you've got to figure out how to make the two worlds blend together. But one of the biggest things that I learned is, once again, I had to humble myself to say there's things that she does and ways that she goes about her daily life that I can learn from. Especially when it came to finances, because I didn't, you know, learn a lot about how to manage my finances when I was growing up. I had gotten into credit card debt and taken out way too many student loans and so forth. And my wife is really good with money and how to manage money and how to clean up your credit and get things off of your credit report and all of that. And she got me together, man. And that was one of the things that I really appreciated about her. And so it wasn't so much about quote unquote traditional roles. It was about what do we have to do in order for our whole household to run more efficiently. Right. So that was a precursor to us really just kind of taking on the approach in our household that we're going to do whatever we need to do to get the work done. Because marriage is work. The day to day is work, right? It can be blissful and we enjoy each other's company and all of this, but at the end of the day, you're running a small business. Managing your marriage. And so it's okay. Well, who's cooking today? Who's picking up, you know, Donovan from school, who's dropping them off at school, you know, who's going to be the chaperone on this trip that we got coming up? How much money do we have to save for our next family vacation? You know, what are we putting in our retirement fund? What are we going to put in, you know, other investments and so forth? Should we create another stream of income so that we're prepared for retirement? These are all questions that we have, but we don't get caught up in the ideology or traditional ideology of what that looks like and who does those things. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't like my wife taking out garbage and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, it's like, I'm not afraid to pick up a pan and start cooking either, pick up a mop and start cleaning. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to sit in a nasty house. And if my wife is busy, because she's a career woman, right? I'm not just going to let things deteriorate to a point where it just becomes ridiculous, right? I'm going to make sure that I'm in a clean household. And if that means I got to put some gloves on and start wiping things down, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So I just think that, you know, you learn really quickly that life moves so fast that you can't get caught up in some of those silly things that really don't amount to much unless it works for your household. And so, you know, my advice, so to speak, for couples and people, young people getting into marriages or people getting married for the first time is like run your race with your mate.
That's good.
So it's whatever path, whatever culture you establish in your household with your mate that works for you and your mate and your family, run that race, because you're going to get all sorts of stuff that people come at you with. It. Oh, you got to do this, and the guy's got to do that, and you have to be willing to filter that information. Yeah, some of that might be good, but some of it may not be applicable. And so at the core, it's between you and your spouse as to, you know, what components are important, what components work in your marriage, what you're going to keep and what you need to keep on the outside, you know? So run the race that works for you and your partner.
Oh, that's good. Hey, when you were, you know, talk about, you were talking about how Sharika helped with her credit and managing money, and then also, you know, kind of introducing you to, you know, spend more time with God, going to church. You know, and I say my dad would tell me this too. He, my mom kind of helped him in the same way. What's your opinion on, because it seemed like women really will get the best out of you. What's your opinion on where, you know, it seems like not that men don't, you know, we don't bring anything to the table or we don't help them out or anything, but it seemed like I see a lot of stories where the woman, the wife, will bring this man up to be like the best that he can be.
Yeah, I mean, even the Bible says it, when, you know, a man finds a wife, he finds a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, for your dad, your mom was his good thing. And yeah. Sharika was my good thing and still is my good thing.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we can learn from each other. But you have to be open-minded in order to accept the information that someone's trying to impart upon you. And like I said, she was never dogmatic about the fact that I wasn't saved. She was very strategic and very methodical, but also very sincere in sharing with me, you know, about the positive things that the Lord was doing in her life. And, you know, it just got to a point where it just started to take hold on me. You know, I say, you know, I got to learn more about this situation. But yeah, I mean, I've also heard from women that they met guys and the guy had the same effect on them that my wife had on me. So it does work both ways. In that, you know, we support each other and we help each other grow. We help each other mature. It just so happened in this particular situation, she helped me mature spiritually. And, you know, she may say that I help her mature in other ways as well, right? But as it pertains to my relationship with Christ and my relationship with money, she was integral and kind of helped me mature in those two areas. So hopefully that answers your question. I just think it's important that we have a heart and a mind and a heart and a discernment to know, like, when we need to just be quiet and listen to other people and accept the counsel that they're trying to provide for us. And I always felt like with her, it was coming from a genuine place. And so I never felt off put by the fact that she was trying to get me connected to Christ.
Yeah. No, that's good. Hey, Jawar, man, I know you got a lot of stuff going on. I know you got your books, you know, you got Finding My Way and then Donovan's College Adventure. And then I know you also had like the your clothing line. You do clothing line. Was anything new going on for you? Anything that you want to kind of like, you know, share with the listeners on, you know, what you got going on new or even some websites that they can, you know, check you out on?
Well, I would just say check out my books on Amazon. I'm doing some rebooting of my website. So it's currently being revamped at the moment, but you can find my books on Amazon. You can find me on social media. I'll be posting a lot of information about my appearances throughout the month of March for National Reading Month. So Facebook is at Juwan Hawkins. Twitter at Juwan Hawkins, and Instagram, Juwan Hawkins.
And I'll put that on the like the notes so people can, you know, check those links out too.
Awesome, awesome. But yeah, you know, for me, it's really about one of the things that I keep, the mantra that I keep telling myself is that although my books were published in 2016 and 2019 respectively, they're still new to millions of people, right? Yeah, there's only so many people that have been exposed to it. So, you know, if you think about books like, you know, Cat in the Hat and, you know, the Wimpy Kid series and other books, right? They're timeless. They've been around for decades, but every year, or like somebody said, every day a new child is born.
Yeah.
And so with that being the case, I think that one of the things I had to sit back and tell myself was, as opposed to, you know, always thinking about the next best thing that I'm going to create, is how do I better promote the things that I already, that I've already created?
No, that's good.
And so I'll be going out to, you know, several schools throughout the month of March and just introducing Donovan's College Adventure and finding my way to audiences that just haven't been exposed to it yet. And so that's really going to be my mission for the remainder of this school year. Who knows? I might be inspired to write something else in the future. But for right now, I'm just going to nurture those two babies.
Yeah, no, like you said, people are always going to college. And people, you know, like you said, babies are being born every day. So, you know, you can, you know, promote those to the end. You know what I mean? So that's good, man.
No doubt.
Hey, this is in my humble opinion with Chaz Douglas. I had Juwan Hawkins who gave me this title. So, man, I appreciate you coming on. Hey, if you're looking to write or publish a book or tell your story, you can go on to chazdouglas.com. That's C-H-A-Z Douglas, D-O-U-G-L-A-S.com, and check me out. I love to work with you. Again, Juwan, man, thanks for your time and coming on today.
Thanks, Chaz, and hey, continue to be blessed, my brother. You're doing a great thing.
Man, thanks.